For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Totally
doodle. You're terrible.
I'm still
watching.
I love it.
Tony, lad.
Let's go examine again.
Who paid for the nachos?
Nor rain, nor wind, nor snow classico.
Boarding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and Happy New Year. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. I am coming to you on Tuesday, January 10th, 2023, the day of the 2023 Colorado Rapids Media Day. Argentina and Messi are champions of the world. Joining me now, a man who is super excited for the FA Cup episode of Season 2 of Wrexham Till I Die, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
It's good to see you, Matt. It's been a long time. Seeing you've been up scheming, skiing, scheming. You've been scheming. I've seen you up skiing on your Insta, and I've been off with the family in Disney World, and neither of us got to break the big news to our podcast listeners. So podcast listeners, if you didn't catch this story in the media, we're really sorry. Argentina won the World Cup. It's a big surprise. I know that a lot of you have not caught up on the podcast in the last couple of weeks, and so you were waiting to find out who won the World Cup final from me and Matt, but it was Argentina. Messi won his first World Cup. Pretty big news, Matt.
Yeah, good stuff there, Rabbi. I'm kidding. So, Mark, let's recap it quickly. World Cup final happened. It was awesome. I think if you look back at historians, I think it's the 1970 World Cup that modern historians say that, like, in the modern era, the World Cup is better. This might be the best cup final that I've ever watched, Mark. And that's what, less than a month, 2 months after the MLS Cup final, which was obviously also spectacular. I was so happy for Messi. I'll be honest, I was normally, as a neutral, there's not a team that I'm objectively watching and I really want to win. I was neutral in 2014. I would have been happy for Germany or for Argentina to win. I would have been happy for either team that would have won it in 2018. But given that France were coming in as defending champions, given that comfortably Mbappe has two more World Cups in his prime and probably three where he's still a force, given what the physical treatment and health treatment that we've seen from players going into their early and mid-30s. I wanted this for Messi so bad. I felt like cathartically living vicariously through a very good friend from undergrad, marching band, who was Argentinian. I was happy for him. Mark, how did you take in the World Cup final? Happy, sad, joyous for Messi, who obviously will be signing for the Rapids in a year.
Nice. I was, my only reason for supporting Argentina was one of those I told you so moments, which we all do when we fill out brackets, because I picked Argentina to win it in my Pittsburgh Soccer Now bracket. And I wound up winning amongst all of our soccer writers. I was the most expert, which Matt is probably going to laugh at, because when I play a fantasy against Matt, he crushes me because Matt is really good at fantasy. If the MLS fantasy website could offer better cash prizes, or for that matter any cash prize whatsoever, we should turn into a fantasy podcast. But I think one of the things that most people who are smart about like brackets and fantasy is, you don't go to a cocktail party and start a conversation about who you picked in your bracket or how well your fantasy team did last week, because generally, that doesn't impress anybody, you know. Although, to be honest, what at a cocktail party is worth discussing? Soccer is always, but that's just me. So I was really happy to see Messi win it. I agree with Matt 100%. Mbappe's young. He's going to win a few more. And Olivier Giroud He's done all the things. He doesn't need any more. So, but the other thing that was important was it was a great final. You know, it was extremely exciting. You know, goals at the end, goals in extra time, an exciting penalty kick shootout. I mean, it was really great. The only thing that was difficult was I had to work that day. So I spent the first hour of the World Cup kind of sneaking glances at my laptop while also, no joke, Matthew, running the synagogue dreidel tournament. So if you go on my Facebook, you'll see that or on my Twitter, you'll see that I crowned and handed out a big cup that day. And the cup has a little tiny dreidel on the top of it because we crowned some sixth grader won the dreidel competition. And that was my job. I was Mark Clatterberging the dreidel tournament.
Second greatest trophy to be awarded on December 18th, 2022. So what was the question that I was going to ask there that I was going to ask there, Rabbi? Like, I don't know how one like first nights of Hanukkah and then does an actual World Cup. Thankfully, for many reasons, I am a member of a religious group that does not have a whole lot of holidays and doesn't have a whole lot going on in the summer or around the typical December holidays that free me up to do other things. Rabbi, anything that we want to say about the winter holidays or anything? Did you get anything good and soccer related for Hanukkah?
No, Hanukkah is a holiday where you buy things for your kids. You know, I don't expect to get anything for that holiday. So we're just glad we didn't set the house on fire. But yeah, it was a good holiday. Latkes were made. Applesauce and sour cream were consumed. Everybody had a good old time. And then we went down to Disney and ate all the things and just ate our way across Florida, which was great. So we had a good time. It was nice to be in nice weather because Pittsburgh at this time of year is just gray, gray, gray.
Listeners, this past Friday, January 6th, the Colorado Rapids opened up their 2023 MLS preseason. Mark, they are currently at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. I was at DSG in the Summit Club earlier today for Media Day. The first, I'd say, proper setup one that we've had since the start of COVID. So that was nice to see another little bit of normalcy happening there. The Rapids have not done any like big team on the field activities. It's been mostly gym and then physio on the treadmill stuff as well. So Mark, the club did put out a really nice photo of Michael Barrios doing some cardio stuff with the breathing mask thing that makes him look like Bane, which is absolutely fun. This coming January 12th, the Rapids will be heading down to Santiago de Querétaro in Mexico for a 3-week stint in Mexico, training at altitude and also nice weather. And included in that, Mark, they will be playing 3 friendlies against Mexican opponents. First, Celaya FC and Mineros de Zacatecas, who are both in the second division in Mexico, and then Liga MX side Querétaro, who were vaguely familiar from. I'm pretty sure they've been in CCL sometime in the last couple of years, Mark. And then beginning
they had early... Ronaldinho on their team for a couple of years, or for a year, when he was terrible. When he was fat, lazy, never show up for practice, Ronaldinho.
Okay, and then after that, the Rapids, we're in preseason form here, folks, just
preseason
like the Rapids. The Colorado Rapids will be heading on February 5th down to Orlando to the Champions Gate Complex, where they'll be training for the rest of their preseason, and then, Mark, that will include 3 other preseason friendlies. On February 11th, they'll be taking on Orlando City SC, the Miami FC on the 15th, that's the USL Championship team, folks, not to be confused, USL Championship, former NASL team, I believe, not to be confused with Inter Miami CF. And then on February 18th, they'll be playing Philadelphia Union. And then from Orlando, they will be heading straight to Seattle to open up their season on February 26th at Lumen Field against Los Sounders. Mark, your initial reaction to the preseason schedule, your thoughts on the Rapids heading down to Mexico. And then do we just want to have that lead into a conversation about all 6 of these games being behind closed doors? And according to birdies that may or may not have told me things in the last week, Mark, likely no live streams for Rapids fans out of market.
That's what I expected. Yeah, you know, when it initially happened, I was furious. I get it. I know. I understand. I know that the team doesn't really. The coach is trying to balance giving opponents a competitive advantage and feeling free as a coach to play whichever players still need to figure out whether they're going to fit on the roster or whether they're going to get cut without, you know, feeling the pressure of having that poor kid's parents watch that game on a live stream or see that game from the stands and know that that kid is eventually going to get cut down the road, right? Like, you want to be able to play games closed doors and make decisions off of them where there's no pressure from the outside. And that's why the Rapids have always played one or two closed door games. Balancing that against the fact that us as pundits want something to talk about in preseason to season ticket holders and potential season ticket holders and potential ticket holders and Rapids fans want to look at the team so that they can get excited about it, so they can buy merch and get amped for the season and buy tickets. That's the trade-off when you go closed door, because me and you aren't going to have anything intelligent to say about how the Rapids played in these six games, because we will not have seen these games. Fans won't be excited about the season like they were a year or two or three ago, because they won't have seen the team play. And so the lack of access has a real downside. And I find that something that I don't think the team is properly considering. I would assume that the senior brass sat down and said, we're going to have some games. We're going to have them in two spurts. We're going to play these teams. Let's make them closed door and not offer a stream, because why bother, right? And I think that that on some level totally sucks. Like, it's just bad for, you know, we want the Colorado Rapids to grow as a brand in Colorado. We want, selfishly, more fans so that there are more podcast listeners, and we want more fans so that the Colorado Rapids generate more income and become a better team. And it's harder to do that when they do it in silence. So that's I think the most important take from me. That being said, playing at altitude in Querétaro, playing against two MLS opponents, plus Miami FC, who is a very good USL team. They came to play the Riverhounds once last year, and I was covering that game. So I've seen them for years. They're a quality side. They usually put on a lot of physical talent. They'll be a difficult match for the Rapids to go against. So it's a good lineup. I just wish we could see it.
Yeah, to your point, Mark, I think it's frustrating that there's not going to be any real hype around it, because, you know, even I think at that point it gives the two clubs complete control in terms of what gets released. You know, Mark, we've covered this team and other teams in preseason. You know, you comment on if Pittsburgh does things, you know, very differently, where there's a closed door scrimmage and then maybe we don't get details about it. Maybe you get a starting lineup, maybe a list of substitutes, not necessarily who subbed in or what minute they subbed in, and maybe you get a score line and then ultimately who scored the goals. And that's not a lot from a content standpoint to go off of. And you compare it to at least other sports. You know, every single other major sport that we have in this country has some form of a, you know, preseason schedule with a broadcast and then teams or players, fans being able to attend those games as well. And then even with, you know, you look at college football that doesn't have a proper preseason game, normally there's, you know, there's a whole media structure set up around to get film and get an understanding, and teams release depth charts and everything. And so there's potentially the ability for the Rapids to not put out any information on this. We don't have a sense of who's starting, who's summing in, minutes or anything like that. And then there's nothing to go off of. And so I can see where that's frustrating for fans. It's difficult, Mark, for you and me as members of the media to try and come up with content where there's not even a highlight reel package or that, you know, then we have to go off of, you know, virtual media availability, which my understanding is folks at the club will be making that available to people like me and Mark and Brendan Plone and other people who are at Rapids Media Day today. But it's difficult to hype things up as well. And so, Rabbi, I think you and I are really, really hoping then on February 1st that Apple TV really gets the ground running, just like all of the extra Premier League stuff that's available on Peacock, that you have all of that, whether it's the whip around or the weekly show that Mark, you and I have been banging the drum on for Twitter to actually happen, that it doesn't look like it's at least necessarily in the works. And Rabbi, I'm not sure, did you see the thread from Pablo Maurer from The Athletic earlier today about content that could be coming out from every single club?
I did not. I only saw the big release of the studio play-by-play and color commentators that Apple were doing. But go ahead, tell us about what Maurer said.
First of all, congratulations to Marcelo Balboa, who will be on the Spanish language broadcast side of there. I assume, Mark, working with Diego Valeri, which I think is pretty cool. I don't speak Spanish that good, but I would learn it a lot better if it meant I got to work with Diego Valeri instead of you. But so, thread from Pablo Maurer at MLSist on Twitter. Great follow, folks. He is a bit of a troll, but he does good work, as I'm about to describe. Got my hands recently on a document MLS distributed to its clubs last month. In it, the league lays out expectations for what each of its clubs need to provide in terms of video content for this new Apple TV deal. And then here's the thread. Within the MLS season pass, that's the where you actually have to pay for it on top of just getting Apple TV, folks, each club will have their own vertical. In this doc, they're being called club rooms, in air quotes. None of this content that's in these club rooms is exclusive to MLS Season Pass. A lot of it might get run on club social websites, etc. A few initial offerings. The Ritual, which seems to be a fan-focused piece that lays out club traditions, supporter culture, etc. A series of two-minute-long profiles on a dozen of each of the club's players run all year. A five-episode series on iconic players, coaches, etc. A minimum of five classic club moments pieces, which will look back at club history at least 2 minutes long. This document also lays out in-season content that includes a weekly first-team report, at least 3 minutes, basically just training updates, B-roll, news, match previews, etc. The club has to deliver every post-game press conference for regular season playoffs and Leagues Cup matches. So, Mark, there's potentially a lot of content that was just me and Brendan Plone on a Zoom call with Robin Fraser that now it's going to be out there in the ether for the public. Monthly content includes a community report focused on what each club is doing locally. Super fascinated to see what the Rapids do with that. And an academy report. There's also an MLS Next Pro focused video offering 2 times a month during the league season. League-wide, I've heard that from folks at clubs that this might be a bit too heavy of a load. Whatever the case is, one thing is clear. Some clubs, the ones which are already delivering great content to fans, are well-equipped for this. Others will have some catching up to do. Anyways, enjoy. Mark, the Colorado Rapids could hire a brand new person who could do this full time and nothing else and still be a very busy individual.
Yeah, you know, to the Rapids' credit, the digital and video team have always been very strong, but it's never been a big department. It's always been 3 or 4 people, and they're producing all of that video that gets consumed during the game. They were kind of, I think, also involved in some of the altitude broadcast stuff. So it's a heavy lift. I mean, it's a small team that they've done great work as a small team, but it sounds like the league is asking them to do more than they've ever been asked to do. We'll see if they can step up for it. It's a great question. You know, we've always been the smallest market team in the league in terms of spending on these kinds of things. So the question of like how much are they going to be pushed to spend out of their comfort zone, and is quality going to suffer as a result? We'll wait and see. I'm not optimistic. Should I share my thoughts on the new announcers, Matt? Is that a worthy announcement for now?
Just the last thing that I was going to say on that, Mark, I think it's a good sign for me that Apple TV's buying in on having evergreen content and stuff to like introduce people to the league as well. You know, like the Rapids have done a really good job with the Elevate series that they've put out, but where other than like random anniversaries of stuff do you get, you know, highlights of, you know, top club players or, you know, moments or things like that? Other than, you know, in the old history stuff that comes up, when do we see highlights from 1997 making MLS Cup? Do we see stuff from MLS Cup 2010 other than that particular week in November? Not a whole lot. And so the fact that they're building this out, there's educational stuff on the current players, there's educational stuff on club history. That's something to where someone who's a casual fan of an MLS team or a casual Rapids fan or a casual soccer fan that gets this, and like then it's an introductory thing, you know, in ways in which I think the NBC in its first couple years did a really good job of that. There's a whole TV show on Apple TV that was based on the premise of a commercial that was making fun of Americans learning the game through the eyes of an American football coach coaching a Premier League team, and Ted Lasso coaching coaching Tottenham. So I think it's nice to see all of that content. If it's done really well and if it's organized visually to where it's super easy to get, that's a really easy way to introduce fans to that. I've gotten my dad and my brother Mark better into the Premier League, and the thing that they've really liked watching on Peacock has been the Premier League big interviews that they've done with an individual player, where they'll see them and I'll mention them, and so like they know who Alexander Mitrovic is, but then it's like the they see the big Premier League interview, then they get a better sense of that. Do the Rapids knock it out of the park with that stuff to where it's really easy to in like 2 hours catch up on Rapids history and then be more informed is a really good question, and hopefully Apple TV has an answer to that. Rabbi, you were saying.
Oh, I just wanted to share that today the Apple TV MLS season pass announcers got announced. They are Kendra de Saint Aubin, Maurice Adu, Lori Lindsay, Danielle Slayton, Taylor Twelman, Marcella Balboa, Sebastian Latou, Sasha Kleschen, and Bradley Wright Phillips. I just want to say something about them before I flip the page to the next six. De Saint Aubin has done color commentary in Minnesota. I've always found her work quite good. Danielle Slayton's actually one of my favorites who I've been listening to for years and said, wow, she needs a bigger platform. I was really glad that Apple picked her up. She's been doing color commentary in San Jose for the last couple of years. She does a great job. I'm really excited to see her work. Taylor Twelman, I've always been a fan of with ESPN. Maurice Adu, I think he's mostly been with Fox, if that's right, Matt.
Fox and then on the Atlanta United broadcast.
Yeah. And he's wonderful. He's really, he's one of those rare players who gives a very level-headed perspective without getting too complicated, but he's very personable. Lori Lindsay, I don't know very well. Cello Balboa, no, I don't need to explain to you. And then there's three rookies here, which is Sebastian Latou, former Colorado Rapid. He was only a half-season addition to the ball club in 2016. Sasha Kleschen, who just retired 2 days ago and clearly landed right into a new job, who's always a wonderful player for the USMNT. And Bradley Wright Phillips, who was a legend for New York Red Bull and a few other teams in MLS. Is an interesting... those are all rookies, though. The second page is Diego Valeri, Liam McHugh, Jillian Sakovitz, Tony Churchy, Mac... those are all the in-studio people. That, for me, is a very interesting mix. I'm not sure that's going to work. Sakovitz is fine. I've never been blown away by her or anything else. I don't know Liam McHugh or Tony Churchy, and I've never seen Diego Valeri behind a microphone. So putting them in the studio, it's either going to work or not. Studio teams, as you can tell from the Paramount broadcast, from the Fox broadcast, and from the ESPN broadcast, it's all about chemistry, right? Do you guys riff off each other? Are you funny? Are they relaxed? Are they going to be uptight? Is someone going to be knowledgeable? Is this just going to be a bunch of meatheads chuckling for, you know, 4 hours like the NFL pregame shows or what? And then you get some the main play-by-play guys, Max Bretos, Steve Cangialosi, Jake Zivin, who I think was in Portland, Pablo Ramirez, who's been with Liga MX up till now, interestingly. So I assume Pablo Ramirez will be doing the Spanish play-by-play. And Frederick Lord, who I don't know anything about. So it's kind of a mixed bag for me with play-by-play. I'm not a huge Max Bretos fan. I think he's fine. But if you were to tell me who are the best play-by-play guys in MLS of all the broadcasts I've watched, he wouldn't rank in the top three for me. So that was an interesting call. I'm going to reserve judgment about all these guys. Jake Zivin's fine. I mean, I like his work. I think he's above average. But I'm not so sure that this is the strongest lineup for English-speaking play-by-plays we could have gone with. I'm pretty happy with the rest of the lineup, though. Any thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, just two quick things that I wanted to add, Mark. I know Sebastian Latou, at least somewhat part-time, had been doing some media stuff with the Philadelphia Union in studio. And then at times when Sasha Kleschen was injured in his last 2 years with the LA Galaxy, he was doing a little bit of radio and then also doing some stuff for Los Dos when they were doing their broadcasts on ESPN. Or excuse me, it might have been radio, it might have been locally on the actual LA Galaxy website. So some of them, they've dabbled in media as well. But to your point, Mark, this is a... there's a solid group of, I think, core, like the actual media people. There's a good group of people that maybe did something else in soccer or who've been around MLS but have good experience that they're bringing maybe into a slightly adjacent role. And then there's some guy, there's some players that they brought in who are very knowledgeable of the league but maybe are going to be learning on the job and maybe there to be color or filler, not necessarily in a bad way, Mark, but, you know, if you're bringing on, you know, Shaq, you know, Shaquille O'Neal's first time on Inside the NBA, he wasn't there to be like a, you know, he was there to be Shaq and bring his bravado as well. And so I'm sure Diego Valeri and Kleschen and Latu are all very knowledgeable about the league. They're all relatively articulate players from the media availability they had. That doesn't necessarily mean that'll translate into them being good commentators. Mark, we've seen, you know, former players that have been absolutely abysmal, and then we've seen color commentators that have become better analysts, and then one generation later, people completely forget that they played or don't know a whole lot about their playing career as well. And so we'll see how it goes, but overall, a good first lineup. It is a little short on numbers if you're talking about the actual broadcast teams, Mark. I think it's 6-6 in both languages, and with the simultaneous kickoffs and most Saturdays teams being 7:30 p.m., you could not do an Eastern Conference kickoff at 7:30 and then necessarily be immediately available for a kickoff in the Mountain time zone as well. You could, in theory, do an Eastern Conference time zone game, and then assuming there's no weather delay or a, you know, a Qatar level of extra time, then have another 30 minutes to then pregame into a kickoff on the Pacific time zone. But Mark, I think they're going to have to double those number of broadcasts they have in order to properly cover, you know, the, what, 14 games potentially on a single match day they're going to get on a Saturday. We'll see what happens. We know that broadcast crew will not include Richard Fleming, but you know, we'll see.
Yep, I agree 100%. My initial reaction was slight disappointment to the lineup, but the immediate point that some of the folks on Twitter pointed out to me was they're announcing more players, more broadcast teams to go. So we'll see what happens.
Mark, right before Christmas, the week of Christmas, we found out that the Colorado Rapids chose to waive Colin Warner. I confirmed that in the early part of preseason, maybe around the CCL games in 2022, Warner had signed a one-year extension through 2023. That, folks, was why he was not listed as an available free agent and why he was listed as on the roster rather than having an option that needed to be picked up in the end-of-season press releases that the club ultimately put out. He's now been waived. Mark, my understanding of the MLS rules then is that because of where Warner is from a salary and then also a veteran status standpoint, he's just in the pool of available players that other MLS teams could pick up off of waivers relatively easy from a paperwork and a procedural standpoint. Warner is still being paid for that guaranteed contract through 2023. That is not a part of the Rapids one offseason buyout option they have, and that money's just coming from the general MLS collective entity, I don't know, budget. It's coming from somewhere, as most monies in MLS come from, Mark. The Rapids are not paying Colin Warner's salary as of right now, is my understanding. Rabbi, your thoughts on the timing of this? And I have to think on some level, maybe this is the end of the road for Colin Warner until one MLS team gets devastated by injuries at the number six.
Yeah, my guess is that this was probably mostly a, we're going in a different direction. We want to free up the space. We probably don't want to play this guy. Kind of decision. You know, the question of whether Colin Warner is a better player at midfield than, for instance, Ollie LaRaz is a good one. One of the things that you do when you remove an older player from the lineup and you have a younger player there to fill in for him is you force the coach's hand. You basically make it so that he can't play Warner over LaRaz, or at least, you know, get him a spot there. That's one possibility. But the main thing I think here is the point that you made, which is that it was probably the end of the line for Colin Warner. There just wasn't much, you know, meat left on that bone. But if you're asking the question, like, does that really free up a whole lot of space? Not really. I mean, currently, according to my spreadsheet, the Rapids have two slots in the senior roster available, one slot in the supplemental roster, and probably one slot in the reserve roster. So there's not a lot of additional players to add, and it's only kind of a maybe that they're gonna fill out that those last two spots on the senior roster. So did they really need to get rid of Warner to make room for a big player they were going to add? No, I don't think that's it. I think they just basically said, this guy's probably not going to play. We've got better players ahead of him. Time to just show him the door and, you know, be honest that, like, you weren't going to play this year anyways. We don't want to waste your time by having you be the long end of the bench. I mean, I think to some degree that's a little bit of the Drew Moore situation, where Moore barely got any minutes last year. And when he did, he didn't look super great. And, you know, he probably would have been, it might have been a good idea for Moore to have retired last year. So we're saving Colin Warner that difficult decision at the end of this year.
I also think maybe this is maybe there was also the timing of it is what I find particularly interesting here, Rabbi, because, you know, you could have waived him at the beginning of the season, or you could have waived him at the beginning of the offseason, thus making him available for the reentry draft and everything. And I don't know how much that would have affected it. The fact that it's been, what, two, almost 3 weeks now at time of recording and no team has picked it up, I think shows where the market for Colin Warner is as well. But I mean, effectively, I think he probably knew, even if he played last year, that he wasn't going to get, that it was probably going to be 2023, and then he was going to have to retire, or if he wanted to just go slug it out on the end of a bench in a USL championship team making like 30K a year in, you know, wherever, playing in minor league ballparks, that would have been an option for him for the summer of 2024.
Can I say something? Thank you for saying that. My theory, when it happened, I just remember this as you were talking, Matt. My theory is very odd, but I think I'm right on this. I think the team really respected the hell out of his career and said, listen, we never really paid you all that well. Here's the deal. We're going to sign you for another year. We're not going to keep you. Sometime in January, we're going to announce your release, but it's a guaranteed contract. You're going to walk with your $85,000 as severance pay for the year. And thanks for everything you did for us. I think when you make the league minimum as a senior player, the least the team can kind of do is say, like, listen, we don't spend a whole lot on our players, but the least we could do is send you off with a nice little retirement package. Because so that's my theory, that they did him a courtesy by not waiving him in the reentry, before the reentry draft. I don't know. It's a weird theory. Maybe it doesn't hold water.
I don't think, Mark, that Porrick Smith went to Colin Warner, offered him a contract extension in February of 2022 and said, by the way, we're going to waive you before even the 2023 season started. I do not believe that was the series of events. That being said, Colin Warner is being made whole financially, and in theory, from a financial standpoint, he has a year to figure out what he's doing next. And Mark, I'm sure there's plenty of coaching opportunities in Denver if he wanted to pursue that or do whatever else that he wants to do.
And I think Warner was a Rush guy, too. So Colorado Rush have always been really proud of him. And there aren't a whole lot of pro players out of Colorado Rush. So that might be a natural move for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, according to his Twitter page here, Marka, he played in he spent a little bit of time in the Liverpool Youth Academy in 2022. So I don't know if that is correct. He was also at University of Portland. Maybe they need a coaching opportunity if he fancies moving back to Portland. But we'll see what happens with Colin Warner. But Rabbi, let's move on. I podcasted after the super draft, Mark. So I'll just quickly, your thoughts generally on the draft, on the acquisitions of Calvin Harris, and if you have any poignant information based on you being more in touch with college soccer, particularly in the Northeast, than I am, about Moise Bombito out of the University of New Hampshire, and then Sim Liu, the goalkeeper from the national champion Marshall Thundering Herd.
The only thing I can say about Moise Bombito is he's an interesting call, because there was a lot of excitement during the draft. A lot of people were saying what a great player he is, how dominant he was as a player. And my only questions about Bombito were, the University of New Hampshire didn't really play a very difficult lineup because they're not in a very difficult conference. And so it's just a really interesting question as to whether Bombito is going to translate to Major League Soccer, where the level is so much higher. The counter to my proposition is that Philip Mayaka was playing the best players in college soccer in the ACC, and he looked very good. And then he showed up at MLS and couldn't get it done. I mean, he didn't look good at all at the MLS level. So maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe raw physical tools and the ability to dominate in college soccer really matters, and Bombito will be fine. I think Semele, the odds that he sticks are low, so don't get too attached, folks. And I think the odds that Bombito sticks are only moderate. So there's definitely room along the back line, I think, with Michael Edwards going out. I think Bombito is the one-for-one replacement for him. But then, you know, Edwards didn't really do much for the team. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited about Calvin Harris. He didn't really make much of a mark at Cincinnati. Maybe with another year under his belt, he'll make something happen. He has a very Nicky Jackson kind of ability in which he's got raw physical tools, pace, height, leaping ability. But he doesn't have a lot of kind of, from what I've seen and what I've read, he's not necessarily a fantastic finisher or a great straight line dribbler. So, that's kind of the book on how Nicky Jackson was with the Rapids. He had a couple of flashes, but he could never really develop beyond what he showed up as from college. And so that's why he's back playing in USL. Maybe that's where Harris goes, or maybe Harris is a raw potential that hasn't been tapped yet. We'll see.
Just a couple Ask HDHLs before we get out of here, Mark. Listeners, we will be finishing off the show with the full interviews during the Rapids media today from Jack Price and Cole Bassett. I have a few others as well that we're going to try and stretch out, especially, Mark, if we're not getting highlight reels on what the Rapids do against Querétaro and the other Mexican teams. We're going to have to make those interviews last, but we'll be hearing from Jack and Cole to finish out the episode. But let's get to some Ask HDHLs via Twitter. Rabbi, first one comes from Jody Robbins. Are we going to sign some players or what? Mark, I feel like there's a lot of pessimism going on around the Rapids community and on social media, and I'm not there, to be honest. The team's approaching full health. It's my understanding Abubakar Keita and Brian Galvan are going to have a mostly normal preseason, as well as Ollie Larraz. Yaya Toure will be a little bit slower to them in terms of when he gets there and is having normal training sessions and availability for games, given his injury happened in August, September, I think. But I think people are down because there haven't been a whole lot of big signings, but I think just the fact that they have a clean bill of health and there's a bunch of young players that I think are going to make a step up relative to where they were last year, as we have seen with pretty much every single young player under Robin Fraser year to year, and especially from their first year with the Rapids to their second year with the Rapids. I think this team right now, they're a left back signing away from me comfortably saying that they're a playoff team, Rabbi. I think between Bombito and the other options you have at center back, there is a viable third center back option you have there. I think the midfield's going to be much improved. Cole Bassett's coming back. He's got some energy at the individual and at the team level in order to be super motivated. A fully healthy Jack Price, and then Ralph Prizzo could step up as well. Ollie Larraz could step up. And then one of Calvin Harris, Jonathan Lewis, Diego Rubio, Kevin Cabral is going to be a viable option at striker. There's options, there's versatility, and there's a lot of signed players. It's not like this team's coming into preseason with only 20 players signed to first team and everything. I don't think there's more than another 2 to 3 at most signings that are going to happen before the first game against Seattle. And really, other than signing a quality proven left back, I think they're mostly good at every single other position, which I could not say the first MLS game of last season with where they were injury-wise. Rabbi, your thoughts?
I agree. The left back position is the one they definitely have to fill in. The really big optional position that the Colorado Rapids may add to, there are two. They may choose to go out and get an experienced center back, especially if the team is looking to play three at the back at center back. Because I think a lot of fans know that, you know, Danny Wilson is 31 years old. He may be beginning the decline. He may no longer be a viable starting center back, but you have to find someone who can start the attack and make nice passes. Gustavo Villasia is a big question mark, and the recovery of Abubakar Keita is a big question mark. But if you think that Keita is going to be the guy, then you're not going to go in on a center back. So the other position that you might still go in on besides left back would then be striker. And that's if you believe that Diego Rubio was better as an attacking midfielder, or you think that he needs a partner up top. And the reason you might think that is some of the best work he ever did was with Kai Kamara as his, you know, kind of target striking big body dude up top. So that's a theory that you might go for, which is that you think the Rapids should add one or even both of those two positions. But I think, Matt, you made the main points, which is this team's additions for the upcoming year are, you know, the big acquisitions in the offseason are Brian Galvan coming back from injured reserve, are Abubakar Keita coming back from injured reserve, are Cole Bassett coming back from loan, right? So they're players that we already had. They're just coming back to us. The last big piece of that puzzle that we haven't spent much time talking about is Kevin Cabral. He is the big signing for the Rapids in the offseason. The huge question that we haven't had any time to talk about, which I think we will when we do more of a preseason preview, is what we think of the Kevin Cabral signing. We talked about it a little when he was acquired, but very simply put, he's a big bet on it with a big question. And whether he can start to finish, isn't that a ridiculous thing to say? Whether he can finish properly or whether he's a wide winger who can't find the back of the net and is terrible in front of the goal is really the most important question. I think the Rapids think that he has the ability and he just had the yips with the Galaxy. But that's a bet and nobody knows whether it'll come good or not.
Yeah, I'll probably turn this into an article for Burgundy Wave folks, but you know, to your point, Rabbi, in the media availability we had with Kevin Cabral, he was certainly closer to the Giassi Zardes end of the spectrum. You know, he was asked multiple questions about the Galaxy, playing against the Galaxy, how the trade went around, and he was very gracious. He was speaking semi-broken English and everything. He apologized for that twice. I introduced myself in French, and he perked up and was probably expecting me to talk to him in French, and then I asked him a relatively simple but, you know, slow and clear question in English. And so, you know, I think that there's the Kellen Acosta end of the spectrum of like the, I have FC Dallas circling on my roster, you know, on my list and everything. When are we playing Orlando? Because I'm still mad at Oscar Pereja 6 years later, kind of a thing. And then there's like Marc-Anthony Kay, where it's like he's salty, but he's here to ball. Jonathan Lewis, who had that energy, let it go, and ultimately is focused on other things. And then Zardes was just like, you know what, Columbus Crew, do what you're going to do. I'm just happy that I got a club that wants me in the Colorado Rapids. I'm going to do my thing. And Cabral seemed much, much closer to that. But, you know, to your point, Mark, he's the biggest bet that the Rapids made, both in terms of cost of acquisition and, like, significance of what it means financially right now and potentially for the future in a resale in terms of, you know, revenge of this, the island of distressed assets, SC as well. So, you know, I don't think, Mark, I think... I don't know that the Rapids are going after a number nine, Mark. I think they're going to be curious to see, can Darren Yappe, who's currently with the U19 men's national team, whether or not he can develop into something. One, or him or Calvin Harris becomes the number nine on this roster, or do they then need to sign somebody in the summer? Similarly, they've got four or five viable options, if we're counting Daniel Cachone with Rapids 2, who are a viable third center back option. And I think the Rapids would rather let a few months go out, figure that out, and then try and do something in the summer rather than think, you know, okay, we've got Diego Rubio, who's our Paul Mullen, and then we need a big horrible person up top. Let's go get Ollie Palmer, is my thinking. But we'll see what happens. The window's open. There's still plenty of time for things to happen, good and negative. And we'll be here to cover it here at Holding the Highline. Next, Ask HTHNL, I will throw to you, Mark. There's an interesting question of what the Rapids are doing financially, given the windfall they have from the UC Health shirt sponsorship. Well, and then, as also, Mark, the Apple TV money. If you assume all of the money are going to clubs, folks, then on an annual basis, MLS teams individually will be getting about $8 million this particular year. If we're assuming that it's the $2.5 billion and then divide that by 10 years, so $250, and then how that splits up amongst the 29 teams in MLS. Mark, I assume some of that money is going back to the league office, but I think it's a valid question, Mark. There's now many more millions of dollars that are coming to the Rapids via the very sponsorship and financial levers that exist with the shirt sponsorship and with the new streaming deal, and yet we've yet to see the Rapids really splash cash on that. Mark, do we have any inkling of what the rules are about where that money can and can't go? Do you think the Rapids are spending more money? Or to Mark Harrow's point, is there a valid question of whether or not KSC can just decide to pocket that and count that against the operating loss that is believed, based on Forbes articles, that the Rapids lose about $6 million a year?
I think the 6 million figure is too high. I mean, a couple of years ago, the number was closer to 1.5 to 3 million. So I'm not sure where they're getting the 6 million. But my math shows that the Rapids' current salary demands across the roster are 8.3 million. My assumption is that the new money that comes to them will help them get closer to breaking even. One of the things that's interesting about Major League Soccer, there's two things I want to say here. One of the things that's interesting about Major League Soccer is that there's not exactly a minimum salary that you have to offer, right? Like a minimum wage bill, right? Like the entire if you wanted to put together a team in which all of the players made roughly the league minimum, that is not forbidden, right? You wouldn't be discouraged from doing that. The only reason you'd be discouraged from doing that would be the fact that each team gets GAM from the league, and therefore you should spend your GAM, because why would you assemble a team with 20 players who make $80,000 a year when GAM will allow you to have three or four players at between $200,000 and $600,000 a year, and, you know, you have that money and it's use it or lose it each year. That's the thing. TAM, for those of you who don't really remember this switch as it came down a year or two ago, TAM GAM is general allocation money, and TAM is targeted allocation money. TAM isn't really targeted anymore. TAM is actually like discretionary spending. So every team in Major League Soccer has $2.8 million that they can choose to spend out of their own budget on players. My suspicion is that the Colorado Rapids have generally not spent much money there because, as you mentioned from the Forbes article, Matt, they lose money. Turning around to KFC and saying, like, hey, boss, I know we lost several million dollars last year, but we're going to spend an extra $1 million on another player on top of that and still finish in 11th place, right? Like, that's a silly bet. My overall take, Matt, is I think I looked at the overall roster spend the other day and saw that out of 28 teams, the Rapids last year were 22nd in their overall roster spend. That may have been based on this year's contract numbers or last year's, I don't remember. I expect that's right around where we're going to be forever, that we're always going to be in the bottom quarter of the league in terms of spending. That's never really going to change until, and this was the second point that I was going to make, until the league and the other owners force the Rapids to spend more on their rosters, they will not spend more on their rosters. And the way we know that is, like, there is a possibility of having three designated players on your team, and Colorado really only has one, right? Or two. Kevin Cabral and probably Jack Price qualifies as a DP this year. You could also have Jack Price count as a TAM level player because you only have to pay him. He made $725,000 last year. You don't have to pay him $100,000 over cap in order to get that down. Anyways, long story short, if the owners in the next CBA want to change the way things go, they could make it so that the Rapids have to start spending more on their roster to create a more competitive league. But we have no idea whether that's going to happen. But folks like Sam Stashkull have argued that for years, that it's the cheapskates in MLS like KSC that have brought the whole league down. As a long answer to a short question, the answer is no, the team is not going to be spending a lot more money on the roster.
Yeah, I do think it is a valid question mark where that money ultimately is going, if it's going into stadium upgrades, or, you know, if it's like, you know, so that they can afford to lower the rent on out-of-market vendors to, like, bring back GB fish and chips or bring back the mini donuts. I think it's a fair question where that money is going, and I think it'd be I don't know that it's a good idea necessarily for most MLS for most of MLS teams to just have ownership be pocketing that difference or using that to offset differences in anything. Mark Harrow posited the question whether or not potentially that KSC could then use that money and spend it on the Rams somehow. I don't know that that I definitely don't think that that's allowed necessarily in the rules, but it's something to look at, Mark, and something that I'll be curious to see, not only with the Rapids, but with other data points around the league. Where are teams generally spending that money? And certainly if it's...
It's not allowed on the books, but everybody knows that all the money is the same, right?
Like, yes.
The Arsenal money, the Rams money, the Mammoth money, the Nuggets money, it's all the same money.
Yeah.
But the you know, you can just hide it under 4,000 different little, you know, subcategories and shell corporations. So.
Yeah, but so I think, you know, I'd be curious to see where that money ultimately gets spent, Mark. And if it's spending on other things that are within the club, I could see some fans being happy with that. But also, is that money allowing, you know, RSL to, you know, spend a club record $4 million transfer fee on some Ecuadorian winger and everything, where the Rapids are still scraping and using interleague assets to acquire inter-domestic DPs as well? That's going to continue to set the club behind. So to your point, Mark, I still think if the Rapids don't change, or at least don't try to at least keep up with where MLS is going and other teams are spending that Apple TV money on first team, particularly big transfer fees as well, it's going to further cement the Rapids in terms of where they are in terms of the tiers of MLS, and further limit what their ceiling can be when it comes to making the playoffs and doing anything in said playoffs. Last Ask HDHL that we'll address tonight, Mark, comes from Rapids Foreign Legion. When you are crafting a new Holding the High Line podcast, how much time of that process takes from start to finish? What type of scripting is involved? Do you have any past favorite episodes? Rapids Foreign Legion, we have a rundown and I'll have some notes. Sometimes there's a Google Doc that'll talk about what we're talking about in the order. Mark and I obviously have our own personal notes that we'll make if we do a lot of prep for something, or if one of us makes a really good point and the other one wants to piggyback off of that. I'll say in the first season, so 2018, there was a lot of editing because one of us would mess up, or just Rabbi and I didn't have our rhythm down between each other and our transitions down. That increasingly has decreased. So there might be one or two edits where one of us like kind of talks ourselves into a corner and just wants that cut from the record and restarted. There's famously, I think in season one or season two, there's an episode where like I'm coughing off mic and I didn't have myself muted and Rabbi just keeps talking, and the way that we recorded, it's easy for me to silence or mute one of us but keep the good audio from the person who is talking. And we decided to leave it in because it was partially comic relief, but also to acknowledge that we're human, we make mistakes, and this is the kind of stuff that happens. So we're putting out the best versions of ourselves, or a slightly more polished versions of ourselves, but it's not a disingenuous one, I think, if you've seen the conversations that we've had. And certainly we do make mistakes, and sometimes we leave them in, and sometimes I'm able to cut them in a clever way, and sometimes we make mistakes and I'm not able to cut them in a way to where it's not obvious to some listeners. And I think that's authentic. I think that's based. I think it's on brand. And I think it also shows that we're human, but also we care very deeply about the quality of the podcast. And we've worked really hard and iterated and learned and implemented changes and tweaks over the years that we've done this podcast to put ultimately the best product out there, but one that's still human and authentically us. Rabbi, anything that you want to add on that? Do you have any favorite past episodes?
Yeah, favorite past episodes I'll start with, which is almost any time that I get to do an interview with someone that I've always wanted to interview. I mean, Jordan Angeli is definitely my favorite. That is like probably over a year ago in terms of interviews. The other one, because I name checked it in an article I wrote this week for the Substack, is when we had the great Diego Rubio debate. And that was a great one because we had been talking about whether Diego Rubio was any good for like a year or two, and Matt decided to actually sit down and focus a whole podcast on just figuring out like whether we thought that Diego Rubio was going to be good. And that was held in February of 2021. And Matt and I both concluded that we had lost faith in him. We didn't think he was going to get it done, and he was just not going to be any good. And in 2021, he didn't have a great season. He wasn't particularly memorable. He had 3 goals in 2021. And then, of course, in 2022, he had 16 goals. And me and Matt both look like idiots. And it's one of those moments where, I'll be really honest, when I look at a Colorado Rapids player and I say at the beginning of the season, I think he's cooked. I think he's washed. I don't think anything's going to happen. You know, I got no expectations for this guy, and they really perform. I love to be wrong in those situations. I love it. I absolutely love to underestimate a Colorado Rapids player and then find them to be really good. I remember when Alan Gordon joined the team, and I was like, this is a total waste of time. I can't believe we got this guy. He's never going to be worth it. And he like won three games single-handedly after the 75th minute by being put on and then dunking the ball into the back of the net. And it was just glorious. It's just absolutely wonderful to be wrong. And so those are my favorite episodes. So the great Rubio debate, and anybody I interview, but Angeli was probably the best of the last 2 years.
Yeah, some of the episodes that stick out to me, Mark, or maybe where we had an interesting situation from a recording standpoint. So early on in the podcast, when I had a different job to the one I have now, and it was to like the, it was you recording from the same spot. I don't know if you'd moved to Pittsburgh yet at this point, Mark, but then, you know, I was like in a different hotel room in a different city, and like the intro, the banter to the pod was always the hotel setup, where I was, and then what public art they had as well.
Sure.
The episode where we did the I think we did that day where Kellen Acosta, the news had broken like a Sunday night, and then they had an introductory press conference and then a meet and greet with the fans like Monday afternoon. I went to that and like drove straight to your place, and like from your basement, like we were like munching on brownies and sipping whiskey and just like talking about how excited we were to have Kellen Acosta as well. You know, we did that, I think your last podcast where you were physically in Colorado, Mark, we did from your porch as well. So I mean, we've had some fun situational ones. I still miss the basement, to be honest, because recording nice. In person is just, it makes things so much easier in a lot of ways, and just acoustically your basement was just absolutely perfect for that in ways that, Mark, unfortunately, the Memorial Michael Azira basement and the Jeff Lerwenowitz podcasting kitchen island are not the same. Haven't gotten a whole lot of comments on the last episode I did, folks, from the Connor Casey closet, so let me know what you think about that. But any episode where we have a really good interview is super interesting for me, Mark. Even it was just like the, you know, the 3 or the 4 minutes where I think I featured it on the pod when Sam Nicholson had signed, and like the first day that he was in training I spoke to him and we got to hear from him. Obviously the Richard Fleming and the Marcella Balboa interviews were fantastic. The Cole Bassett one, I think, is top 10 all time that we had. Probably a lot of Feyenoord fans that were listening to that right before their final that they had against AS Roma. And then, you know, for disappointing reasons, ultimately, Mark, I think two of our top five episodes were the episode where we previewed Pidsgiving, and then the one that we did where I was recording from John Babiak's basement in the immediate aftermath of those. You know, a podcast episode where we talk to somebody important or talk about a meaningful event and do it in a really good way that the fan base responds to. Rapids Foreign Legion, that's where I get the most fulfillment from doing any particular episode. And some of that's based on what we build up to be ready for those opportunities, and some of that's based on luck that we're podcasting on this day and news breaks this day, or we're the only Colorado Rapids podcast that is still consistently recording. So if you want a podcast on this particular news that broke this day and we get it to you within 48 hours, we're the ones to come to. So that's what gives me so much joy and so much meaning. Let us know, listeners, on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast, what's your favorite episode of all time as we approach the end of this month, Mark. January 30th will be the 5-year anniversary of the pilot episode. So,
oh, Matt, I'll add two other interviews. I was thumbing back through the list, and there are a few times, you know, when we get a Colorado Rapids player, you know, that it's always great to interview them, but the honest truth of the matter is they're supposed to be available to us. We're the only Colorado Rapids podcast in the world. I think the two people that I've talked to in the last couple years, which I really enjoyed, one was you and one was me, is getting an interview with someone who I think to myself, how did we get this interview? I can't believe this person thinks we're worthy of talking to them. And one of them is Brian Dunseth, who's you know, the broadcaster for RSL. And he spoke to you in July of 2020. And he's just a wonderful guy. He's really nice. And which is really funny because he's supposed to be our sworn enemy, our mortal, you know, opponent. But like, he's been really lovely. When you've interviewed him, he's done a great job. He's a definite, like, in-the-bag homer for RSL. I think he walks the fine line between, you know, supporting the club and calling things out very neatly. He also has been very sweet to me online. You know, when I tweet something during an RSL Rapids game, he'll usually quote it on air, which I always find hysterical. The other interview that I really enjoyed was talking to Matt Doyle, and we just sat on Zoom and drank whiskey and, you know, reminisced and joked. And we're men of a certain age, and, you know, we have friends in common, and we both love the beautiful game. And, you know, on the one level, it's just two guys talking about soccer. But on the other level, I'm thinking to myself, like, I can't believe I get to do this. This is so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what does it say, folks, about the fact that Rabbi and I talk about our favorite episodes and 7 of the 10 of them are one where one of us interviewed another interesting person and neither of us actually spoke directly to each other. But okay, I think that does it, Mark. I think that's enough of you and me talking. Let's hear from the only people that truly matter to Rapids fans, and those are, of course, midfielders Jack Price and Cole Bassett. Listeners, you can follow us collectively on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast, at @soccer_rabbi, and at LWS Matt Pollard. Check out all of our written content, Pittsburgh Soccer Now, lastwordonsports.com/football, burgundywave.com, and then our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. Listeners, I will be coming out with something from behind the paywall that a listener asked me in person at the DNVR bar during the World Cup as well, that I promised them I would put behind the paywall because it's interesting, it's clickbaity, and it's going to make people give us money as well. Substack, Mark, by the way, doing absolutely fantastically, so keep that up, current subscribers, and then if you do want to subscribe, holdingthehighline.substack.com. Send us your questions via email at rapids96podcast@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskATHL. Here's Jack and Bassett. Listeners, we'll see you next week, maybe in 2 weeks at the latest.
Peace.
How are you guys doing? Good? Yeah? Good to see you all again.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Good to see family again. Just, yeah, be back around. So, yeah, excited. It's kind of hard seeing some of the other teams getting going already so early. We're still waiting, but yeah, we're excited.
Well, that's your guess. This is the go. So, and with that, obviously, the next trip before that.
Yeah.
Anything in particular you want to work on or see from yourself over these next 6 games, just to be ready for what will be, you know, one of the longer seasons you guys have had in addition to the next
game? Yeah. I mean, first off, for me, there's a lot of new faces since I've been here last time, even though maybe it doesn't seem like it, but there are a couple guys that, you know, you got to get a connection with, and, you know, I'm definitely looking forward to that, is playing with some new guys on the field and building those relationships. These first couple weeks, I mean, preseason, the first couple weeks is never really fun, and it's definitely going to be a lot of just getting fit and getting our bodies right. I think the one thing that I saw from afar last year is there's a lot of injuries at this club, so I think... That's not my job at this club, but, you know, maybe just trying to keep guys healthy for these first 3 weeks especially, and just build us up to get to the stage in Orlando where we'll play 3 MLS teams there and then be ready for the game in Seattle. So I think it's going to be a fun 6 weeks overall, getting to travel to places where we're kind of on site and we're going to be with the team. So it'll be a lot of fun and we're looking forward to it.
Well, you know, just covered.
Yeah, there was a bunch of things. I mean, I think I've talked with Matt about this before. One of the main things that I needed to work on going over there was ball security, knowing what to do with the ball before I get it, and just being, you know, such a reliable midfielder on the ball. And I learned a lot of that over there. I think that was one of the main reasons at the start that I didn't come in and play right away, was that Arne, you had to be pretty good on the ball, and the guys I was going up against over there were pretty good. You know, Koktu and Till in the midfield that were going against me, that one moved to PSV Eindhoven, and Koktu's probably going to the Premier League next year. So, you know, I was going up against good competition, and that's kind of what I took away from that. And then, you know, also the training habits, like you talked about, there was a little bit of a difference. Like every single day you have to be on top of it over there. Even if it's a Friday, like it might not be as tough on your body, but I would say like physically and, or I mean mentally, you really got to be on top of things. Like, just in tight spaces, you got to be able to think your way out of certain situations. And I kind of got used to that. And now, since I've came back, just trying to train with my brother and some of the other guys around here, just playing pickup and stuff like that, you notice the little differences that you can help the team progress with. And I think I'll try to do that and step in, maybe hopefully more as a leader this year on the pitch than I was beforehand.
Hold on. Just a question, you know, with Colin gone now, I guess it'd just be what Jack and Ollie were the midfielders you would overlap with, I think.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the midfield core and Valve and everything? What do you think of that group and what do you bring to it in the elevated way?
Yeah, I like it. It's a young group. I remember my playing days against Brian when he was at FC Dallas, and he's a pest. He's not fun to go against, but similar to Kellen in that sense, and I think it helps me in training, especially going up against those guys every single week. It kind of helps prepare you for the games in terms of, you know, he's always going to be on you. He's going to bite for tackles and stuff like that. So as a 10, personally, it helps me be prepared for games and stuff like that. Ralph, I've heard a lot of good things about. I've heard he's kind of a bulldog in there and, you know, good on the ball as well, but does his job really well. And I think it would be exciting to play next to him. Pricey, Ollie, I know them very well. I've grown up playing with Ollie, and we're really good friends. And then Pricey, he's been a mainstay with me in the midfield while I was here. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, Diego played a little bit in the midfield last year as well, and I love playing with him. So I think whatever midfield combination comes out of our team this year, I think we'll be a strong group, and we'll be ready to win the midfield battles this year compared to last year. I think maybe it was a little bit more open than Robin would have liked, and I think we'll try to fix that a little bit this year.
How much did you miss being here?
It's the people. I think it's not as much the place. You know, you just get accustomed to being around good people, and this state has always kind of been known for, you know, the people that live here. It's just a bunch of people that you really enjoy being around, and it makes your life a lot better. And not to say over there was bad. I actually really enjoyed my time there, but, you know, it's always easy coming home to family and seeing familiar faces and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm really excited to be back with this group. I know this group well. And all my friends and family can watch me every game, whereas over there we were always playing at like 4 a.m. and stuff like that. So it wasn't as easy. And now they'll get another year of being able to watch me, and I'll be able to spend time with them after games and stuff like that as well.
How much did you talk to Russ when you were over there? Was it constant? Was it not much?
No, it was a couple times. When I came back in the summer, we had a couple chats. I was always out at DU watching my brother, stuff like that, and he was out there a couple times, and spoke to him about how the season was going, what he was thinking, and he was just asking a lot of questions about how it is over there as well. And then the day I got back, you know, it all kind of happened quickly. I had a game, I think, on the Sunday versus Groningen in the Eredivisie, and on Tuesday I was talking to Robin back here in Colorado. So it happened kind of quick once I came back, and we haven't fully got to catch up yet, but I think we've shared some ideas and stuff like that, and mostly just kept caught up on the personal side and stuff like that, and just how he's been enjoying life. But I think with the long off season that they've had, I think he's ready to get back at it as well.
Are you putting your time at Fortuna behind you completely, or is that something
I think that club I'm going to put behind me. Yeah, I wish I could explain more about exactly what happened there. It's just something I don't think will benefit me coming out and saying stuff about it. So yeah, I just kind of want to put it behind me. It was nothing on me in terms of like at Feyenoord. I know I can play better and I had good competition that I was going against. That's the reason why I didn't play there. There's not really much reason. So, I kind of just want to put it behind me and focus on here and helping this team do well this year.
Cole, what are some of your personal goals outside of the Rapids? How do you see the U.S. men's team playing tomorrow? Maybe you can come to that thought going back to the national team runs in your head.
I'm pretty excited. I mean, the national team does have a camp at the end of this month. And I think Anthony will be the coach for that, which is, you know, exciting for me. I know him pretty well, and I know the style of coach that he is. So, you know, hopefully I'm able to make a push for that roster in the coming weeks. And then throughout the year, I think this is a year where maybe more opportunities will be given. There's not a major tournament this year. We got Copa America next year and the Olympics as well for the under 23s. So, yeah, this year should have plenty of opportunities, I think, if they have camps. And, you know, the U.S. it's an honor to play for them, and I kind of think I took my first camp a little bit for granted after when I was, I believe, the 2020 season. I didn't get to make my debut in that camp, but now, ever since, I've really appreciated every single time that I get an opportunity there. So it's been a year, I think. I was at the last January one, but I'm hoping that I get there at the end of the month as well. So, yeah, well, I'm looking forward to the opportunities this year.
You mentioned going to the UC Rutherford. Yep. If you make it the season, you think he's going to be a home run anytime soon?
I hope so. I might have to talk to Borg about that one. tell him to sign him up so he can start paying some rent in my place as well. He had a really good season. He had a tough first year, but it's been amazing to watch him grow. Because his first year, I think he was playing like 10 minutes off the bench every week. And this past year, he's leading goal scorer, leading assister, and it just brings me a lot of joy to see him doing well. Because you know he's dealt with it pretty well in terms of, you know, I became a pro at such a young age, and I wouldn't say there was a lot of attention around me, but maybe to him it seemed like, you know, he's always getting the attention and stuff like that, and he's dealt with it so well, and now he's training really well. So especially being back during this offseason, he's kind of been my guy that I've been hanging out with all the time. I know he's my brother, but we've been training a lot. I've been working at DU with his trainer as well. So, yeah, it's just been great to see him back, and, you know, he's got a different mentality now. I see it, and he's also gotten a lot bigger since I've last seen him. So I think he does have a real shot. I mean, there is a difference between college and pros, but he's gotten to train with a lot of the guys just because I train with him. So I think he does have a good shot. He's probably one more year in college at least, but you never know. If he has a good season next year, he could be here very soon.
How special has it been just to bounce ideas off each other?
Yeah. Yeah, it's something you take it for granted when I had it before, and when you're living in the same house, and then, yeah, you go away and you're 8 hours apart, and, you know, he's got training in the morning, he starts class right at 12 after training, so it's like you get to talk to the kid maybe once a week on the phone, probably, which is not easy when he's been your closest friend since you've grown up. So I think it's been nice being able to bounce ideas. He asks questions about how to get better in certain situations just because they don't know, and even me being here before, I didn't know little things that Arne Schlott taught me. Like, there was a lot of little things that I've never really seen about the game and stuff like that, and then you learn. So I think it's valuable for him to have this resource, even though I don't know everything, but I can help him try to elevate his game, and hopefully he can be here at Rapids one day, and then he can continue on his career.
So, folks are excited that you're back. We haven't seen you know, on that pitch in a while. Yep. What's the big difference between the Cole Bassett that we last saw and now this season? What's the biggest difference between the Cole Bassett that we get to see this year?
I think it's just more of a confidence in myself and in my abilities. I think how good I had to be on the ball over at Feyenoord has helped me a lot, and I just feel such a more just more comfort with the ball now that I'm back. And I think, like I said before, I gave away too many balls when I was here before, even though I was creating a lot of chances. There's a lot of opportunities maybe I was giving the other team, or just more times that we had to defend. So I think there's just more of a confidence in myself, and also maybe a little bit more of a leader. I mean, I felt like a leader in a sense in the last group, but I was still so young and I didn't have as much experience as the other guys. But now, you know, I've gotten to go off to Europe this past year. We went to a Conference League final, got to go to all the big stadiums, even though I didn't get to play in the tournament. And we played Jose Mourinho in the final. Just that, like, you're around just such big names in the soccer world, and you're around it every day. So I think I've just gained so much more experience and how to be a good pro. So I think I'm going to try to come back and kind of help maybe some of the younger kids that need it as well. And then hopefully you see it on the field that I'm a leader, and you know, I can help this team win a lot more, because it did hurt seeing them not in the playoffs last year. In the past 2 years before that, I felt like I was a pretty key member of getting us to where we were. So I think I can kind of take an even bigger role now and step into that for the team this year.
Yeah, speaking of the postseason, you know the expectations of the club. While you weren't able to, you know, last year and watch, how motivated are you to help
very motivated, the first part of the question. You know, when I first signed for this club, it was just as young kids that grow up around here. It's not fun when you have a bad team. You know, there's not as many people you can relate to. There's not as many, you know, stars that you can watch and want to be when you grow up. And when a team is winning, it's fun. And I think we saw that with the city in 2021. And, you know, after we finished first in the West, how much the city appreciated what we did. And when we got to go out to Nuggets and Avs games, stuff like that, like how much they really cared about us and what we were doing. So I think it's mostly for the community around here that I'm motivated to bring it back to where we were. And, you know, I think Denver doesn't get as much hype, I would say, in terms of the players that they produce here and how good our soccer is here. We do have a lot of good girls that have came through here. But I think on the men's side, it hasn't been as much so as maybe other places. So for me, being a hometown kid and helping this team get back to playoffs, it does motivate me a lot. And then, you know, on the side of how are we going to do it, it's probably an answer you don't like, and Robin probably says it all the time, but it's going to start next week. And it's going to be a long year. We got a lot of competitions to play for this year, and that's also what excites me. I mean, Leagues Cup, adding that. I think Open Cup's coming back for the first time in a couple of years. So the more tournaments that you're able to play in, the more games that you have, just excites you even more, because that's how Europe was. And yeah, you just want to play as much football as possible as a footballer. So we're excited. It's going to start next week, and it'll be a long year. But I think if we did what we did in 2021, we'll have another good year.
What was it like to see the Avs win? And did that sort of show you if you guys get to that point, what the city would do for you guys as well? So
yeah. Yeah, it was special. I was actually on a plane back to Europe when it was going on, but I was sitting there, I got the Wi-Fi, I was watching the game, and it was pretty special being able to watch that. That's my second favorite sport, and my dad still plays hockey, so it was pretty special for me because I grew up playing it a little bit and stuff like that. And yeah, it's when the city hasn't won a championship in, I think it was 20 years for hockey, it was something special. And this city is a sports city, and when we have a good team, everybody rallies behind them. So I think as a soccer player, to be able to have this place packed out, which it was versus Portland Timbers in the playoffs, that's how you won every single game. And you kind of got to earn that, because you got to show that you're fun to watch. So I think for us, it's about coming out, having a good season, and hopefully we have many more of those packed stadiums to come, because it's a special atmosphere to play in front of.
Jack is the captain for a couple of years now, obviously. 2020, growing success. 2021, spectacular. 2022, disappointing. What's the biggest thing that you learned from last year as a leader that's going to make you a better captain this season?
You know, we didn't give in, even though the season wasn't easy for us. We had a few injuries, including myself, which was tough at times. And we just didn't have squad just wasn't, for the gaffer, available enough in terms of, like, he didn't have the whole selection to pick from the whole group, which is tough. But just the fact we didn't give in, you know, we kept going, even though it wasn't great at times, you know, and it's just one of those years. Hopefully we put it behind us this year and we kickstart and start well, which is important. But yeah, it was just a different season that we've had previously. We obviously made the playoffs the 2 years previous. And so maybe we got into it thinking we're going to be fine regardless. And we just didn't hit it going, and we didn't get a great start. I know we won the first 2 out of 3, was it, or something? And then we just didn't do that consistently. We didn't play consistently well as a team. But I like the spirit. I like the fight, because, you know, we took it for the last couple of weeks, really, even though we were still probably not mathematically going to make it anyway. But we didn't give in. Even we go to Austin last game of the season, nothing to play for, and we get a point. And, you know, that's good to see. And it's great to see going forward. And hopefully this year we have a better year.
Jack, what have you trained the new signings so far?
Yeah, it's important. Obviously, you see a lot of teams in this league now spending big money and strengthening their squads. And so it's good that we are doing that. Obviously, other teams are taking it to different levels than we are at the moment. But it's good to see Isaac Kelvin come in. He's young. He's hungry. An Englishman like myself. So it's nice to have a fellow Englishman in the changing room. But yeah, we need to strengthen. We know that, especially off the back of last year. And the more players we have that are hungry, you know, doesn't necessarily mean young, but if they're hungry to do well and come here and, you know, perform consistently good, and especially players like him, I think he'll help us going forward.
obviously a rough season last year. Injuries for yourself, but also just kind of across the squad. How are you feeling now? Was it nice to kind of have a break to sit up and watch the World Cup?
Yeah, I'm 100% healthy now. I was probably towards the back end of the season getting there. I just didn't think it was right for me to put myself out there just in case I did have another setback, because the year was, plus we had nothing really to play for towards the end. So it was our decision to rest, you know, and have a good 3 or 4 months where I could just get off the legs and come back this year, you know, stronger, healthier, and I have done. So that's me in 2 weeks after we up in Mexico, but in a bit of altitude. But no, I'm feeling good and I'm ready to go. And disappointing year, you know, I wanted to be out there as much as I could. I even pushed myself maybe a little bit too much at times when I wasn't 100%, but, you know, I want to be out there playing 34 games a season, and, you know, hopefully, touch wood, this year I will be, so I'm feeling good.
What was the off-season like, traveling back home, staying here, being a dad, watching England?
It was good until we made, you know, the France game, but no, it was fine. It was a bit weird having the World Cup, you know, in the winter time, but it worked out perfect. Timings when obviously I was back in England, and I think the first game was 10 a.m. and it was like 1, 4, and 7, so it was perfect for us. And obviously a bit disappointed England didn't go. I fancied them to go all the way, but it was unlucky. I thought they played well. They deserved probably to beat France, but it is what it is. But no, I had fun watching it. Yeah, for sure.
Was the kid old enough to watch it and understand what was going on or appreciate it?
A little bit. He's just turned 3. He's getting into it a bit more. But still, he's not quite there yet. But I took him to a Shrewsbury game, my local team. It was an FA Cup game. We lasted 45 minutes and I took him home because he was just a nightmare. So he's too young, I think, but give him another couple of years. He'll be
2026.
Yeah, then he'll be good then.
Yeah.
Jack, as the captain, what are the leadership traits look to in others that you kind of model your own leadership style over? You know, what do you pull from to lead the squad, you know, coming not just from bad years like last year, but good years too, like 2 years ago? Like, where does it come from? What do you look to? How do you use that to lead the group?
Obviously, the good years are easy.
Sure.
They're easy. You don't have to say an awful lot. Last year, because it wasn't such a good year and I didn't play as much, it's sort of hard to come out, dig players out, because I'm not out there. So it's hard. I can't be voicing my opinion as much when I'm not out there. You know, if it's a tough loss, it's, you know, the lads have given everything. It's tough. But, you know, quiet words here and there, you know, just to remind players, listen, this is what it took the year before, togetherness. We didn't have, probably had the least expensive squad in the 21 season. And look what we got to. Obviously, it was disappointing the way it ended, but it's the hard work. You know, it's in the change room, it's off the field stuff. You know, we had a really good core of players that year where we did well. We hit certain, you know, points every month. We'd go out and have a team dinner. And I think stuff like that, we sort of got away from last season. So maybe do more stuff outside of football, because it makes a huge difference. I've learned that over the last few years. When I was at Wolves, it wasn't maybe as close-knit off the field as on the field, but that year here we had in 21, off the field, everyone got along well. We, you know, we had fun, we enjoyed it, and then you can tell on the field, like, we all want to root for each other, play well, go that extra mile. So I think getting back to that a little bit more this year, because, listen, we don't go and spend 30, 40 million, so we need that. We need that togetherness, and we've known where it's got us before, so that's big. If we didn't have that year, maybe it'd be tough to get that across, but for me, that, but also when I am out there playing as a leader, consistently playing well, I think is a big thing for me. I like people to look up to me and go, listen, he does well every single week. You know, he puts the work in. You don't want to take a day off. And I think that's good for the younger boys like Calvin, for example, coming in and seeing that. And hopefully this year I'll be out on the field, obviously, a lot more, but just to have that leadership. And that's probably one of the reasons the gaffer gave it me. He said, because week in, week out, you'll play well, you know, and when it's time to dig someone out, you will. You know, I'm not one of these that goes around shouting, because he said to me, you're not that, so you don't need to change. So I haven't changed. But I still have enough experience and voice to voice my opinion at times when it needs to be done. So, but hopefully this year I can just lead by example a bit more on the field than just off it.
Jack, Robin said, when I at least will be in that, you know, guys, you know, we are going to have a season like that again.
Hopefully.
just how important is it to have that message from him right away, kind of setting that tone, and what have you guys made of his early, season remarks so far?
To be fair, he mentioned that straight after the Austin game. You know, we were all in the changing room, and he said, listen, we're not going to have another year like this. You know, it's an anomaly. It's just out the window. Check it out. And make sure you come back in 12 weeks' time, ready to go. And on the performance I've seen from the lads yesterday and the fitness tests we did, you know, coming back in good shape, looking fit, healthy, is a good sign. Because, you know, it's a long time. Off 3 months is a long time. I've not really been used to that. You usually get 6 weeks, maybe max. So it's hard to keep yourself in shape. It takes a lot of hard work, and it looks like a lot of the boys have, well, all the boys have come back in really good shape. So I think the message from the gaffer there was, it's not going to happen again, but you need to put the work in now to come back ready to go. And like I say, he asked me again in 2 weeks in Mexico if we're feeling fit and healthy, but that's different. You need that. So, but no, everyone's come back looking really good and ready to go, which is important because, you know, after a bad year, it's easy to maybe just sack off the off season and go, you know what, it was tough. I'm just going to enjoy myself a bit more. So no. We're looking good and just itching for the first game, really. I think everyone is, you know, it's a long time without kicking a ball, so hopefully we'll hit the ground running.
Jack, I'd like to know, what are your personal thoughts and your personal goals ahead of the preseason? You know, having had a great 2020 season yourself, being away from the pitch most of it last year, just ahead of this preseason, these six matches.
See how we can gel as a team, a few new players. You know, we've lost a couple. Personally, get through it. Injury free. It's going to be huge. You know, I've been in and out probably the last preseason, so it's a little tough. You just stop start, you're sort of playing catch up. And I think everyone's goal really in those six games in preseason is to get the minutes. It's more important, I think, minutes than results. I know a lot of people say good results lead into a good season, but I don't think that year when we had a great year, our results were too good in preseason. So, but again, obviously you want to win every game you play, but the most important thing is injury free, get the minutes under your belt, and obviously you're fit and ready to go for Seattle on the 26th, I believe. Somewhere. Yeah. So hopefully, yeah, that's my goal. I think that's the team goal, just to get the minutes under the belt.
With the midfield kind of, you know, rotating over last season, paired up with a lot of different players, and have Cole coming back this season, we're excited about playing with him again, sort of how this midfield shaping up.
Yeah, it's great to have Cole back. On the field, obviously just as important, but off the field too. Great lad. Works his absolute nuts off every single day, which is, you know, as a young kid, it's not always there. You know, you have to sort of push people on. You don't have to tell him to work hard. It's just a given. You can tell he's got that. But he brings quality. You know, that year he left, the 21 season, he was chipping in with goals and assists. And he does a lot of work that people don't see. You know, he'll make that sort of pointless run. He'll go charge the goalkeeper down. He'll go, you know, just put people under pressure. And maybe we didn't have that last year as much in the midfield. And I love playing with him because he'll do that running. I'm getting older now, so I need him in there with me. So now I'm looking forward to it. Just to have him back. You know, he's had a tough, probably what, 18 months where he's not played a lot of football. So he'll be hungry to play every minute, every game and see where it takes him. But I spoke to him yesterday. He's just fully focused on having a good whole season here. Playing well, score goals, and then where he goes from there, it's, you know, sort of up to him.
Two questions there. You know, first, like, what are your thoughts on weeks after, you know, knowing you'll have almost like something different where you'll be taking a month off league to go play, you know, teams from Mexico. And also, your broadcasting appearance the other day with Wolves.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about that.
I'll start with the Leagues Cup. I'm not sure what to make of it, really. It's, you know, it's a weird timing, isn't it, to have it in the middle of a season where, you know, like you say, we're not going to probably play a game here, are we? We're going to have to go elsewhere. And it's going to be like a, you know, that Orlando trip we did for the COVID. It's got that little feel to it. Obviously, it won't be as strict and stuff with that stuff. But I don't know. Until we go and play and obviously hopefully do well in it, it might be good. It might not. It's trial and error, I suppose, isn't it? They've never done it before, so we'll see. But yeah, the broadcasting stuff was fun. I enjoyed that. I did it end of 2018, I think it was, and I had Chelsea, and they won 2-1 that game. So I see Man United this time too. So I've had two good games, but it was just nice being back at Molineux and seeing familiar faces and the crowd and all that. Do you know what I mean? It was nice. It was nice. And maybe 5 or 6 years, I might swing into that side of it and try and do a few more games.
Just real quick, with Leeds Cup, are you at it, you know, worried that'll add to, I don't know, the overall kind of stress with the amount of games you guys will be up?
Maybe the travel, you know, depending where we're going to be based. I would have thought, you know, if it was logical, it would be somewhere close, you know, Kansas or LA or somewhere that's not, you know, too far. But I'm used to playing 46 games in the championship in a season, so I'd maybe a little bit, but I don't know. I think it's nice to have more games, and you'd rather play football than train. So I'd rather play Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, because you do less training. Everyone wants to play games in front of packed out stadiums. So I think on that front, it'll be good just to get more football in. And but yeah, we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah, this is one of the younger midfield cores that you had with Colin departing the club and Cole coming back. What are you looking to do from a mentorship or a leadership standpoint, specifically within your position with the Ralphs, the Ollies, Colts, etc.?
Yeah, just help them, you know, on the training field, you know, guide them. It's going to be tough. You know, Ralph was probably a little bit disappointed. He maybe didn't play as many minutes as he thought he would when he came in last year. But what, you know, he's got some head on his shoulders. He's dialed in. He doesn't moan. I don't think I've ever heard him moan. So when you've got players like that, same with Cole, like I was saying before, it's easier. You know, you don't have to sort of go to him and say, listen, mate, come on, you've got to pick it up a little bit in training here. You're sulking. Because they don't do it. You know, they're sort of older than he is, if that makes sense. Like they, Cole, Ralph, all these players, obviously Brian's a bit older, but he's another one that just gets on with his job. He doesn't complain. So obviously Colin will be a big miss, I think, off the field as well. You know, obviously he didn't play a lot of minutes last year, but he was just a solid guy all round. You knew what you were going to get from him every day. But the young boys are just like that, like Ralph and Cole we suggest there, or talk about, sorry, and they're similar. There's not too much you have to do in terms of off the field, you know, calm them down or anything like that. It's literally just focus and maybe help them with vision or, you know, a pass, or, you know, maybe you don't have to do too much, just keep it simple at times and just knowing when and when to do things. So, but no, like I say, it's easy when you've got players that just want to come in and work hard every single day.
After last season, now fans trying to build their confidence back up with the squad as we move into the new season, what would be your message to Rapids fans and supporters moving into 2023?
It's not going to be a year like we had last year. You know, we'll do our best as players and as coaching staff and, you know, all staff, you know, associated with the club, because last year, you know, it hurt, you know, and the fans that turn out every single week, they're the, you know, the heartbeat of this club, and to let them down, it's tough. You know, we know as players we let them down because we didn't perform to how we could and how we should have. So stick with us. You know, I know there's times where you might want a little bit more from players coming in or money being spent, but we're doing our best as players that are here and want to be here. And, you know, that's all we can sort of give you is 100% every single week. And if it goes our way, it goes our way. If it doesn't, it does. At least we know we've put in all we can. And but yeah, stick with us. You know, we love having you supporting us every single week. So we look forward to seeing you in that Kansas, the first game. Hopefully it'll be sell out. Hopefully. I know it'll be cold, but come out. Come out and watch.
What do you expect out of Yappy this year?
Good question. Yeah. Forgot about Yappy for a minute because he's away, isn't he, with the national team. When did he come back? You know?
I don't know.
Pre-season?
Pre-season.
Okay, so yeah, it'd be great. Yeah. He's, you know, he's the size of him for his age. He just turned 18. 19. He's a big boy. You know, he's filled out. I haven't seen him since I've come back because obviously he's away, but he's got everything. You know, he's tall, strong, fast, knows where the net is. So I think he's got a big part to play this year, especially if, you know, we don't bring another number nine in, sorry, which you never know. We might do, we might not. So he's probably going to have a bigger part to play if we don't. And I'd like to see that. I want to see him have a run of games and just see what he's got. You know, he's obviously got talent because he wouldn't be where he is if he didn't. So I think this year's a big year for Yappy. I think he just needs that first goal. You know, you can see when he comes on last year, he was trying too hard maybe at times, but you do when you're a young kid. You just want to get out there and you're happy to be out there. But he's talked about it. You know, he works hard in training. He does finishing after training every single day. Another thing you want to see with young players and older players too, working on their game. And big year for Yappy. I think, you know, if he comes in and does well, it's his place to lose. So I'm looking forward to having him back in with the squad.
One more if I can, bro. How weird is it not to have Drew this year?
Yeah.
And will you kind of talk about leadership earlier? Like, does that make you want to be more of a leader? Because he won't be here.
Yeah, 100%. You know, Drew, fantastic person, fantastic leader. You know, again, pretty similar to myself in terms of he won't just come in and start shouting, but he talks sense. You know, when Drew talks, you listen. But I think he'll still be around, which is nice. He's still going to be, obviously, still working for the club. So he'll be in and out. He'll probably still be training with us at times because he's kept himself in good shape. But what a fantastic human, you know. And he'll be missed. because, you know, I know the gaffer touched on it a few times where he lent on him more than maybe he needed to, but he knew what he was going to get. He was trusted, are you? And you know what you're going to get. He's experienced enough. He could still play. Listen, obviously, he had a couple of niggles towards the end of the season, but you're speaking to him now, and he would still put his boots on if he was needed, and he'll be missed, but hopefully he won't be too far away.
What have you made of Austin in the championship?
Doing really well. You know, I watched a couple of games live on telly. I didn't get to go to a game, which was, I should have really, I was only about an hour away from him, but that was doing really well. You know, it's a physical league, but we all know Trusty from watching him here. He's, you know, he's a defender, and he defends, he's an athlete. He's perfect. He's perfectly suited, and I want to see him keep developing, because who knows, one day he could play for Arsenal, and that'd be amazing. Obviously, he's their player, so... But no, he's doing really well. It's really nice to see, because another young kid that came in, didn't know what he was coming into, but he worked hard, and look where he's got him. So that's a proper example of what you can do if you come and work hard every single day and want to improve. And so I'm chuffed to bits for Austin. He's, again, another top lad that's doing really well.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.